Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. With me in the studio once again, Drs. Craig Galbraith and Jim Lutze. Welcome back, gentlemen. If you have a question for our guests or a comment to the people that you've sent to represent you at the national, state, or local level, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org and feel free to tweet us using coastlinehqr. Nobody ever does that. Dr. Lutze, your book, Entering North Carolina, sets clocks back 100 years. Well, we can already read a lot into that title. Why do you say that?
I say that because I came to North Carolina in 1964. And if that was at what I'd call the Renaissance of North Carolina, Terry Sanford was just finishing his terms as governor. I had choices of where I could go to school, and I chose to come here to North Carolina because of the fine reputation of the universities, because of the environment, and because of what I thought was a forward-looking political system in the state. I have children here. I have grandchildren here. I would like them to grow up seeing those promises fulfilled, and I don't see that happening now. I'm very concerned about support for education, both K through 12 and university education. And what's happened in university education that's particularly disturbing to me is when I came to UNCW, the state was paying something like 55% of the cost of education. They're now paying more like 35%. And those costs have gone up and they've been passed on to the parents and they keep a lot of kids from going to school. I'm concerned about the environment. That we used to have a $100 million clean water trust fund to keep our waters and streams clean. That has been radically reduced. I don't know what it'll be this next session. I think it was $10 million last session. So a lot of the things that I care about, I see being deconstructed. And I am. I'm mad about it.
Dr. Galbraith, you are in academia. You're in the world of academia at UNCW. You're a professor of economics. How do you perceive, as a political conservative, this trend in public education in the state?
Well, I would have to disagree with Jim in terms of what the university is. I came from California. I have been in the private sector. I've been a founder of a biotech firm, and I've been back and forth between the public sector and the university system. And I came here actually in 1992. From the University of California system. And what I found is that the university system here was without question the most centralized system I had ever seen. The bureaucracy is massive in the University of North Carolina system. It's very centralized and it's massive. And as Jim talks about the increased cost, you can attribute that, and this certainly, these studies have been done, you can attribute that almost completely to administration and bureaucracy. When you actually look at the salaries that university professors make, the number of students they teach, there's been no change in the last 40 or 50 years. And so this tremendous growth is, I think, due to, and I would have to point the finger at the Democratic Party here, to centralize things, to make things more bureaucratic, and then blame everybody else for what is a fundamental problem with the Democratic Party, in not only here in the state, but also nationally.
We have a caller, Cliff from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on. I want to say I'm enjoying the discussion, and I wanted to tell Mr. Galbraith I really appreciate your economic study on the Titan Cement Plant here in Wilmington.
Well, thank you. I
was one of the founding members of Friends of the Lower Cape Fear that started the StopTitan.org website. And Mr. Lutze, I wanted to thank you for your service as well. I voted for you when given the opportunity and would sure love to see you in office. My question was for Mr. Galbraith, and I know this is really nuanced and probably hard to answer in just a few minutes, but I've heard you several times mention fiscal conservatism, and I think it's a little bit unfair to insinuate that one party has a monopoly on fiscal conservatism, because I certainly don't think either party has a monopoly on big spending. The last Republican administration doubled the national debt, took a $100 billion surplus to a $1 trillion deficit, and started two wars that we had no way and no plan of being able to pay for. That's kind of the opposite of fiscal conservatism. And I realize national politics and state politics are different, but how do you reconcile insinuating that the GOP is sort of the party of fiscal conservatism with that kind of spending and debt record?
Dr. Galbraith?
Sure. I mean, you can certainly go back and look at the history and the founding of the Republican Party back from 1856. And you look at the national conventions and the party platforms really through certainly through President Lincoln, after President Lincoln, through Teddy Roosevelt, up through President Eisenhower. And fiscal conservatism is a very, very important part of that process. In fact, Eisenhower has a term. It says, in all of those things which deal with people, be liberal, be human. And in all of those things which deal with people's money or their economy or the form of government, be conservative. And this is the foundation and fundamental of the Republican Party that allowed it to defeat the slave process of the Democratic Party in the South, the Ku Klux Klan, certainly passed all of the major civil rights acts, the founding of the EPA, everything like that is from the Republican Party. Now, I have to agree with you that in recent years, there's been a deviation from the history of the Republican Party, and that's something of concern to me. And I think part of a true conservative economist is to point out where they're starting to have failures. And one of those failures is that you can't be a big spender and be true to the history of the Republican Party. You're absolutely right.
Thanks for your call, Cliff. Dr. Luzzi.
I'd just like to ask the question of, you say the Republicans were passed the civil rights legislation. I will remind you, I was in the U.S. Senate at that time and helped pass the 1994 Civil Rights Act.
Through the
1960s.
You need to check your statistics. A greater percentage of the Republicans voted for the 1964 Civil Rights Act than Democrats. And that is a fact. Same thing in the 1950s.
The president at that time was Lyndon Johnson.
That's right. And it was introduced by a Republican.
We'll have to drill down into that a little bit more, I think. Let's talk for a moment about some of the local races. The New Hanover County Commission race was so interesting. Skip Watkins, of course, was the leading vote getter from the beginning, and he maintained his lead throughout the evening. But as we watched the precinct's report, Derek Hickey and Rob Zappel swapped second and third spots. And there are 43 precincts in New Hanover County. When the 42nd precinct had reported, we were looking at Derek Hickey as the number two vote getter. When the 43rd precinct, that final precinct, came rolling in, then Rob Zappel jumped, and it was just by a couple hundred votes. I think the count was 211 last night. This morning it looks like 204 votes. So we're talking about less than half a percentage point. Why was that so close?
You know, I think that all three of the candidates that were the top getters are excellent candidates. You know, again, I'm not going to be a partisan in this respect because, again, I was involved in county level and I was an elected official out in California at the local level. I'm involved in local politics. And once you start getting to the local level, the issue of partisan politics really start to get a little fuzzy there. And I think what you really need to do is look at the best candidates who can come in and who can kind of run the local community. They're basically hired to do this, run it like a business. They have to position themselves against other communities that are trying to attract business, tourists, and residents, and have to understand what we have to offer and what sort of things we need to improve. And that isn't necessarily a partisan process. There may be partisan components to it, but it's primarily getting the right people that understand the process.
And just to be clear about those results, ballots can still come in by mail as long as they're postmarked yesterday and arrive by Friday. And that could have implications for races that are this close, such as the New Hanover County Board of Commissioners. Dr. Luzzi, just taking a look at the New Hanover County Board of Commissioners, what should this body be doing at the local level to start moving towards what you see as this progressive vision?
Well, I think certainly one of the things, and it's going to be helped by the bond issue, and by the way, I was very happy to see both of the bond issues passed. I think I'm very concerned about infrastructure, and I think as an economic factor, infrastructure is very important for us. And I guess almost everyone in New Hanover County would put traffic and the congestion and other things at the top of their list, at least of irritants that they have. So I think maintaining our schools, maintaining our roads, maintaining our basic infrastructure. And I think, in a sense, paraphrasing what Craig was saying, and I agree with what he said, all politics are local and there are local issues. And I think a local issue that could have some influence on the county commissioner's race is that I think people like to see some divided government. So they would like to see Republicans and Democrats on the county commission so that they feel that all of the views of the community are reflected in the votes and attitudes of the county commissioners.
You're listening to Coastline. It's an election epilogue with Drs. Jim Lutze and Craig Galbraith. If you have a question for our guests about the election and its results, or have a message for this newly elected or re-elected group of politicians, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Dr. Galbraith.
Yeah, just to build on what Jim was talking about, I think one of the interesting issues that has not been discussed on any of the mainstream media and really is an incorrect interpretation of what has happened is, in fact, when you look at the local initiatives, you look at the state initiatives, what passed and passed generally overwhelmingly were things like educational bonds, infrastructure bonds, minimum wage in many different states. And so you have to look at these sort of things in the context that the Democrats didn't do very well nationally and the Republicans took it. So how do you combine the fact that Republicans did very well at the ballot and yet many of these initiatives were very, very successful? And I think that's the key issue of what we're communicating to the elected officials.
Well, that's a really interesting question, because you look at how New Hanover County voters voted, for instance, and they generally voted for very conservative candidates. Michael Lee is going back to Raleigh. New Hanover County voted for Tom Tillis, the majority, and yet we're looking at something. Would a school bond be considered a conservative Republican issue?
I think that's a mistake, because again, when you look at the history of the Republican Party, it's built on the notion of institutions. You have to have very, very strong institutions, and this is the basis for conservative economics. You can't have capitalism. You can't have free markets, so to speak, unless you have very strong institutions, strong education, strong infrastructure, strong property rights, a strong civil legal system. That's the mystery of capitalism, that you have to have those institutions in place before you can have capitalism or free markets work. And I think what we're seeing is that a lot of people believe in that, is that they're voting for the institutions. At the same time, they're voting for conservative fiscal behavior.
And that's what we saw with the passage of the school bonds in New Hanover and Pender County, as well as the transportation bond. Dr. Lutze.
I think if you look at the issues that people across the country and across the state probably identify with, more of them would be Democratic issues than they are Republican issues, that they are supportive of Democratic policy positions, but then they don't necessarily vote that way. Now, the question of why that happens, and I've thought about this a lot, and I don't want to because I think there are some huge overarching issues that are leading to the partisan divide in this country. Some of it is what you might call nativism. How does immigration become such a huge issue in this country? How does concern about the relative position of the United States in the world, and you must wear a flag lapel pin in order to show that you're a true patriot. How does that become an overarching issue? But I think a lot of these things, and I basically think that public are angry. I think they're angry, unhappy, dispirited, cynical, a plague on both your houses in one sense. So I think there's a lot going on under the surface that leads to some of these contradictions. How did we go ahead and elect a couple of Democrats to the Supreme Court?
It's a good question. A conservative Republican lobbyist recently wrote about polarization, gridlock. And I think since last night's election, we've been hearing a lot this morning about gridlock 2.0. Some people are saying the Republicans now, with power comes this responsibility. But many others are saying, oh, no, the gridlock is just going to get deeper over the next couple of years. Dr. Galbraith, which way is it going to go?
I think there's a vast confusion out there, and partly due to some very vocal people, say, on talk radio and television, to assume that the kind of libertarian or Tea Party movement is conservative economics or traditional Republican. It is not. The Libertarian Party is a separate party. Completely separate party, has a different set of beliefs, have a different set of economic theories that ground it than the traditional Republican Party. Traditional Republican Party, I believe, is absolutely what the majority of the people in the United States want. They want strong institutions. That's what Eisenhower said. Strong education, strong infrastructure, strong property rights. These are very, very important things. And then once you have those rules in place, then you let the market work. And that's really what Republican and conservative economics is all about.
Two points in that regard. One, we're not dealing with the traditional Republicans. We're not even dealing with the Lincoln Republicans. We're dealing with a different animal that is now part of the, I call them redeemers. They are not the old-fashioned, middle-of-the-road Republicans, a Jim Holzhauser Republican, a Jim Martin Republican. That is not who these people are. But I almost have to hold my sides to stop from guffawing when you say that the Republicans support the school system, when they have savaged the public school system, referred to public school teachers as government workers, and have attacked the University of North Carolina in an unprecedented fashion. How can you say the Republicans support education?
The history of the Republican Party is very pro-education. The land-grant colleges, NC State, you look at every single university, public university and private university in the United States, that is a technology, engineering, science university, and that was primarily started by conservatives and Republicans. Now, the problem I think the Republicans need to understand, and this is the problem of bureaucracy, is that the bureaucrats and the administrators have created the problem in the first place. You don't, if you're going to cut, you don't give the right to make the decision where those cuts to the people that created the problem in the first place. The problem with the Republican Party in the state is, yes, we do need to cut back. I mean, we're in a recession. We need to cut back. But what you need to do is make sure that the bureaucracy is cut, not the productive core that actually get into the classroom, teach the students, and do the research.
You're listening to Coastline. It's an election epilogue with Drs. Jim Lutze and Craig Galbraith. Elizabeth from Elizabethtown, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm very interested in the homeowner's insurance going up, the auto insurance rate going up, and also the fact that one cannot deduct their medical expenses. That's not very nice for the middle class, the lower class. You know, the rates are so high. Can't somebody do something about that and rescind some of those laws soon?
This is a concern that we were hearing about from local voters all through the election. Dr. Lutze.
Well, I'm one of those who I basically privately am concerned about the fact of the change in what you can write off as far as medical expenses are concerned. And I know that a lot of my older friends are as well. I think it needs to be reconsidered, frankly. I think that needs to be readdressed. I was on two commissions that looked at reforming the tax system. There's no question the tax system in North Carolina needed to be reformed, but I don't like the reform that has currently been enacted, which I think has primarily worked to the benefit of the wealthy and to the disadvantage of the elderly and the middle class.
Elizabeth, thanks so much for your call. What is your beef with the tax reform?
Excuse me?
What is the problem with the tax reform?
As I say, it's tilted too heavily to the wealthy rather than being more equitably distributed. But once you get into it, tax reform, and I'm sure Craig would agree, is extraordinarily complicated. And so I'm afraid that some of these things, such as the health care benefit write-off that your caller was referring to, just got swept up in the maelstrom of ideas that were being thrown into the pot of what can we do. But I think the most interesting thing about the tax reform is that it is not going to bring in enough revenue. It's the only time I've ever seen the state budget with an anticipated shortfall of this year probably $250 million and over the next biennium $500 million because the taxes are not going to keep up with needs.
Dr. Galbraith, how do we plug those holes?
Well, I think there's a couple things. First of all, when we understand what we talk about when we're talking about tax code, there's really two types of tax code. There's one for the personal income and there's one for the corporate income. And all the research in economics, and I will literally say all, will show that a corporate income tax hurts economic growth. You know, and the Republicans, when they came in, they did reduce that. Now, the problem with the personal income tax is it's extraordinarily complicated at the state level and certainly at the national level. It needs to be fixed, but there's a lot of stakeholders involved. And whenever you have a lot of stakeholders involved with something, you end up with a piecemeal process of trying to improve something. And this cannot be improved on a piecemeal process.
You're listening to Coastline. Now that the dust is settling, we're sorting through the results of the midterm election. If you have a question for our guests, Drs. Jim Lutze and Craig Galbraith, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. This is Coastline.